Session number 21279, Real 9.
Cyril Williams, Real 9. So, you came back, and you're obviously injured and discharged and so on. How long did you remain unable to work? I mean, what did you do with yourself? I mean, you had to get yourself sort of back together, didn't you? You went home.
Yep. Yes, and I suppose I wasn't thinking about getting a job. To be quite honest, I didn't know what I was going to do, fixed like this. But then I went to a factory where they had a laboratory, and went to the laboratory there, and that's where I met my wife-to-be. But I wasn't there for very long, and
that was in which town?
That was in Manchester. And then I decided to train for teaching, and well, I think that was probably the right choice. I was in this establishment, Frising, with a lot of seriously wounded people, all sorts of wounds, and the approach to disability, they got on with it and did what they could and weren't going to be beaten. I remember standing in a line with a pile of prisoners, including the one in front of me was a big American who lost a leg, and he was on crutches, and they'd brought in some, I think they were Yugoslavs, and they were civilian workers, and they had just sacking round their feet, and whether they'd had frostbite because of that, but they were in need of hospital treatment, and they were sitting around not looking happy. But this big American said, "Get out of the way, you bloody cripples." And all the people who understood English roared with this, that he had said that. And they were puzzled. And what has anyone here got anything to laugh about? But they were a good bunch of chaps. And the attitude to disability, serious disability, it was usually very positive. And, well, when I became a teacher, I thought going into special education, where the physically handicapped children, maybe there would be a certain rapport, and I would know, you know, some of the problems. And I've met and been with people who are going to find a way around disabilities, and I've tried to do that myself. So maybe that's a little extra that will help there. And I think it's that's worked out. Mm. The fact that, in spite of the problem, I've always been a keen swimmer, and I've taught people with various disabilities how to swim, and I think possibly I maybe communicated a positive attitude. I like to think so, anyway. And so that, in a way, I'd been given the opportunity to help people with problems, and by doing that, I've helped my own problem. I'm certainly, I'm convinced that I've never felt sorry for myself. I've never felt sour. The Germans, of course, well, just one thing. When I went, before the wall came down, I stood a platform looking the looking over the wall into the place where the bunker where Hitler died, and it was pointed out by a guide. That's where Hitler was killed. And I didn't feel like shouting hurrah, but I thought, well, you're a misguided fool, but you've caused a lot of trouble, and to me as well, you know. So I was, well, to say glad is maybe a bit strong, but I wasn't displeased to see where he was killed, because I thought he deserved to be killed. Although, I think that he possibly didn't realise the unpleasantries that were caused. He didn't personally put people into ovens. I wonder if he really knew this was happening, or if he just wanted to be rid of the Jews and didn't want to know the nasty detail. Maybe that's it. So I moved around to various places as a teacher and well, deputy head, and then head of two establishments, and
all dealing with the with special children.
Yes, yeah. Yes, including the visually handicapped. I set up a unit in Bristol. There was already, when I took over the school, there was a unit attached to my school for visually handicapped. But the attitude is the main thing to disability. And in my room, Zimmer 9 it was, in Freising, there were two Americans who were blind. One of them, a coloured man, who wasn't going to be let down at all, and made jokes. The other man, I think he was a New Yorker, a white man, he was sunk in gloom and rarely spoke to people, and in fact he suffered much more because of his attitude. He couldn't make the best of it. Mind you, blindness is a handicap that I wouldn't like to cope with. And in fact, I can remember when I got to Freising and we were being lined up to be seen by a medical officer, there was one chap, I'm not sure whether he was an Arnhem fellow or from another. You see, Freising was the nearest prison hospital to the Brenner Pass, so we got a lot of people from the Italian front there. But there was this chap with piles of bandages around his head, and he turned and said to me, "Now that I'm in a proper hospital, I hope they can save my sight." And, you know, I just nodded, and obviously I hoped so. But they were unwinding these bandages around his head, and when he turned to me, I hadn't realised the eye sockets are as large as they are, but the eyes had been, you know, taken out, so the poor bloke, you know, wasn't going to be helped because his vision had gone irrevocably.
So, in a sense, it led on to a fulfilling career.
I think so.
Yeah, worst things happen at sea.
Oh, yes, yeah. Yes. Yeah. And I must point out my wife's assistance. I told you that on my 28th birthday, I lost my arm. And also Bob Boyce, who I still see occasionally. 21st, yes. What did I say? 28th. Why? Slip, that's right. Bob Boyce, who, like most people, was a keen smoker, but on, it must have been the 29th, the day after I'd had the surgery, he and another glider pilot from my squadron, they went around trying to scrounge a cigarette, and they finally found one. And That was my birthday present. But another birthday present was when my wife very cleverly produced our first child on my birthday.
Oh, really?
So it was clever. And
yeah.
And he's now a doctor, so he's helping to heal. So you know, I'm pleased about that.
Mm. Well, he got a good grounding in disability from you, didn't he?
Yes.
Yes, and attitudes to that. Yeah. How did you, I mean, you were in, you know, very, very stressful battlefield situation for quite a few days, weren't you? How did the stress affect you?
Well,
it's when you were holed up in that house.
Oh yeah, they were truly terrible days. But now I can register my complaint. I'm still awaiting counselling. So really, I think that we got on with it, and I think I was fortunate enough to be with such a good bunch of people that we supported each other.
So no one cracked,
no
one was particularly wobbly
well,
than others.
Somebody signalled for the blowing of that whistle, and there was a bit of a, well, somebody had cracked there, but it was very, very rare. And I'm pleased that out of our group in the house, well, it was somebody who wasn't a glider pilot who said, I think we've had enough, you know.
Did they all get home?
No, because the one who got me the cigarette, or gave me the cigarette, and then was rude to the orderly, because the orderly wouldn't do anything.
Yeah.
Well, he didn't get home. I'll tell you another thing, that when I got back, repatriated, I wanted to get back to Broadwell, which had been my airfield, to see who survived, what had happened to so-and-so. What I didn't know, and I was still 7 stone, limping from the leg wounds, looking terrible. And what I didn't know, the station was about to be sealed off for the last airborne operation of the war. So I must have really... I'm sure nobody... went AWOL, you know, because of seeing that. But it it was not the best thing to do.
A big morale boost.
That's
really,
right.
Is it?
Yeah.
I went on the last one. So, do you? I mean, do you have strong religious convictions? And did you sort of? Did they reinforce your determination or comfort?
No. Of recent years, I've. Watched Songs of Praise. That's the limit of my well, my mother wanted me to go to church. She was a convinced Christian. I'm a bit ambivalent, I think, because a friend I made in Freising was a Polish para who was wounded at Arnhem, and a Catholic, as the Poles are. Another good friend, an English parachutist, he was a Catholic, and they were going to another building. They were being allowed to go to a church service on Christmas Eve. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, I'll be a Catholic, and then I could go out. I found it, it didn't make me a Catholic, it didn't even make me a Christian, but I found it a very moving service. There were the nuns up in, they supervised the kitchen and they supervised the x-rays, and they were up in the sort of balcony of this church, and I noticed some of them crying throughout the service. But there were German soldiers there. They were wounded, badly wounded soldiers from France, Greece, all over the show. It was quite, it was very moving, not quite moving, and it made its impression. When I started watching Songs of Praise, I don't know, people who, acquaintances and friends of mine, who've got deep religious convictions, I mean, they look sideways when I claim or even mention Songs of Praise as having a great deal to do with religion. But I think it can do. I mean,
it's echoing a lot of the things that you experience in church as a child, I think, very often, doesn't it? Did you come across any cases of self-inflicted wounds or desertion or anything?
No.
In your lot?
No.
I thought you were going
to
say.
No, I remember going to get my hair cut. I think it was the last civilian haircut before I went in the army. And the barber said, when are you going to be in the army? So I said, oh, I'm going to be there in about a week's time. So he said, do this. It was done in the First World War. He said, if you cut yourself or even get even with a slight wound, he said, get a dirty coin and rub it in the wound. So I repeated this to my father. He was incensed. You do no such thing. So I said, I was incensed then, but not daring to show too much of it. I said, you needn't tell me about that, Father. But so I'd heard of these self-inflicted wounds, but no, there was nothing like this. No, I mean, nobody, well, I didn't know of people giving up.
What do you think about the way medals were issued?
Well, that chap who wanted to be a glider pilot but finished up in the independent company of the Paras, which is almost their Pathfinder force, he said, he was a prisoner too, he said, it's not fair that anybody who was a prisoner, nobody who was a prisoner, got a medal. I'm not sure whether that's right or not, but he feels that that was a bit unfair. Well, I think I'm a bit cynical about the way medals are dished out. I think that a lot of things happen in war that are not witnessed. So, and anyway, it's, well, a medal or a sign. I was talking to lecturing to a group of doctors once, and I mentioned that, about my school. And I said, we have badges, head boy, head girl. And I noticed one or two doctors smiling indulgently at each other. And I said, you shouldn't smile about this, because I said, you'll be expecting later on, you know, your OBEs and this and that. So that's our small system. But, well, some of the right people get medals. I mean, when I've seen the citations of some people, and in fact, one of our glider pilots, he got a high decoration at the crossing of the Rhine, you know, into Germany itself. And I'm sure that was really deserved. Highly deserved. But Murray's right, this bloke who came with me from the Fife and Forfers, if it was as said there, he did. It was, as the American citation goes, for the Congressional Medal of Honor, duty above and beyond the call of duty. Mm. Well, there are people who give rather more. But I was in a group where most of the people, in fact, I only know one who fell short. And in fact, without using his surname, a friend of mine who was in that house said, oh, he said, have anyone heard anything of yellow? And then he used the surname. And He always spoke like that. Now, that chap had said to me, when I got that SS fellow out of a wood with ferns where if people dropped, they could be hidden. And in fact, the Germans asked for a 30-minute, in that sector, a 30-minute break in the fighting to get wounded out. And I've never seen that reported anywhere else. But when I came out there, this chap was there, and he'd known what had happened, and he said, "What's it like to kill somebody?" And I said, "You should have been in there with me." And, well, the fact that he got that tag of yellow from somebody else, from something else, he's the only one, though, that I knew that had fallen short.
So you had little contact with troops of other countries. I mean,
yeah, that's true. Except as prisoners.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, of course, we had
a lot of contact. So, I mean, did you have opinions about the Americans' sort of ability and so on?
Well, as I'd mentioned earlier, there's the true story of the American tug pilots getting rattled when they came under fire from American, from Italian ships as they were going
so
there.
So that sort of coloured the way you That's saw
right.
the Americans in general.
Yes, but, and of course there were the stories of how the troops, well, they didn't perform very well in Tunisia, so I've read and heard. And I was disappointed on behalf of the Americans when, where did they go in and, an African place. Anyway, they went in with great force. And then one of their helicopter pilots, a gunship pilot, he was shot down. And his body was dragged behind a truck through this town. Does that ring any bell? Well, it was a nasty thing for them to do, but they pulled out shortly after that. And again, when the Marines, supposedly America's best, when they were in Libya, not Libya, the Lebanon, and a girl of 14, apparently, she drove a truck that was full of all sorts of explosives. And it blew, it was a sort of high-rise flat. And I think a couple of American Marines died in that explosion. But they pulled out very shortly after that. And I think that the enemies of America, they believe that the American public can't sustain these body bags coming back. So there is that, although I've been in America many times. My brother became an American. I had a nice American wife. But I like them, but there is this weakness. I don't think they're cut out to be ground troops. But it might just be prejudice. Just like Manchester United is supposedly better than Bristol. So,
what about Padres? I mean, you told me a couple of interesting tales about Padres. What's your opinion about Padres in general, Army Padres?
Largely a waste of time, I think.
That says it all.
Yeah.
What about conscientious objectors? Did you come across anyone? Did you have
No, I respect them. I appointed a chap to my staff. I knew that he was a conscientious objector, and I thought his background made him suitable for my school, and I thought he did good work, and I should accept him as what he is and see if he's a good teacher, and he proved to be a good teacher. So,
what would you have thought about them at the age of, you know, 20?
I would have thought they were wrong, and One of my fellow prisoners in Freising was an Irish boy who deserted from the Irish army, and he'd lost part of a leg, and he couldn't return to Ireland. He was a Dubliner, and he had a widowed mother, he told me. And this was the thing, being a prisoner. You were away from life. And in fact, I'm sure we all thought, those who were being repatriated, that this is all a dream or a nightmare, and all will be well once we get back to England. And several people have said that, you know, there's that sort of thing. There was a bit of a jolt there, because it was an unreal situation. But I got on very well with this Irish fellow, until he said, I would have preferred to have gone into the German army, but I couldn't get there. So I said, that's a terrible thing to say. I put it rather more forcefully. And why is that? It was partly because there's the age-old enmity, you know, the Southern Irish detests the Brits. But I said, look here, but you've fought on the right side. I said, we didn't know the extent of the camps then, you know, the concentration and the death camps, but it was known that they were killing the Jews and other people, and they were harsher than we would have been. And in fact, if the German army had been in Britain, the nonsense with the IRA would have been stamped out. I'm convinced about that. And in a way, I would justify that and would even be in the force. But, no, I said it was unfair treatment. And the fact that we fought them, and I still hope we're going to win, we probably saved a lot of innocent lives. And, oh, I don't know about that. But maybe, I'd like to think that he thought it over and agreed with me that he was on the winning side. But when the Germans, they have their padres, and they must have prayed hard during the war for a German victory, just as it is our people did it here, you know. It's easy to be confused, isn't it?
Yes, yes. Right, we'll stop that there. Cyril Williams, end of reel 9. Cyril Williams, reel 10. So, where were you on VE Day?
I was in the Kendal, Westmorland. I was going to see a friend. In fact, when I realised I was badly wounded, well, no, it was back to England, I had a letter for, gave me proper rank and name and I think number, and it was a girl who, from Westmorland, she'd written and she'd heard, well, obviously read, you know, about the Battle of Arnhem, and I suppose wondered how I'd got on, and she didn't hear anything, and she sent this letter which reads the War Office, and asking for information on this Sergeant William C, you know, Glider Pilot Regiment. She'd heard on the radio that prisoners of war were being returned. Oh, I'd sent her a prisoner of war card, and without giving any address, but just saying, I'd been badly wounded, but it was nice, and the fact that I'd not given her my address, it placed her under no obligation. Anyway, she wrote to the War Office and wanted to know if I was being repatriated, as she'd heard on the radio. And the dear old War Office, guarding its troops, it didn't say yes or no. It just said, if the soldier you refer to does return or is returned to the United Kingdom, we will try and forward a letter. In other words, if she'd said that she had triplets or something like that, then... So I thought that was decent of the army. In fact, I think the army can be compared to a rough but honest stepfather.
That was interesting. Mm. Yes, they don't take sort of loving responsibility, but there is responsibility there. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So, VE Day, did you celebrate? You were in Kendal?
I was in Kendal. Celebrate? Not really, because I had a drink and I watched the people celebrating in the street, and I remember seeing the Chief Constable of Westmorland being danced around unwillingly by a drunken crowd. But I really thought of good friends who'd been killed. So it was a subdued feeling that I had.
So what did you feel about the war against Japan at that time? Because that was going on, wasn't it?
Well, it was, and sadly, we didn't pay too much attention to it. Those who were in, just the European theatre, and those who'd gone off there. I mean, if we had relatives, I had an uncle by marriage, and he was taken at Singapore, and... my daughter's father-in-law, he was taken at Singapore, and he had a terrible time of it. My school doctor, he was a prisoner of the Japs. And when I was having a senior Japanese medical officer along to visit the school, he deliberately stayed away and told me he was staying away. And...
what did you feel about the war in Japan at the time?
Yes, we were. And I mean, when our capital ships, were sunk, and when we heard of the goings when Hong Kong was taken, wounded being bayoneted, and this is not hearsay, and the nurses being raped. We thought they're an unpleasant lot, and several people have said to me, look, it's a pity they couldn't have dropped us on a Japanese town or city, because the view was, well, they deserve knocking about, and if we were going to be beaten as we were, and beaten badly because we were outnumbered 5-1 and we hadn't tanks and they did, well, we'd rather have been wounded and killed and captured over there because we disliked them. Right. Whereas I don't think the Germans were all that disliked. Mm.
The individual Germans, did you feel animosity towards them?
No.
And the individual soldiers? I
mean. No.
Because you've spoken quite in a very fair way about even the SS.
Yes.
So most people seem to be quite frightened of.
Well, I admired the SS, and to be quite honest, this is the fighting SS, as most of them were. I mean, those who went into camps, and they were quicker to kill prisoners than we would be, I know. But there's the SS soldier who knocked me about. There was the officer who gave them a dressing down. There was the SS doctor who gave me a shouting about because he thought all the Brits would shoot at wounded doctors, that sort of rubbish. But again, the fellow who is second in command, who winked. And what I didn't mention, but in fairness I think should, when I was being moved from there, from the hospital, and going on a prison train, he came along to see me off, and all the German officers, even the ordinary Wehrmacht they were using the Heil Hitler salute. That came along later. The SS, they did it all the time. But when he saluted me, it wasn't the Heil Hitler thing. He gave me this, which I thought was a nice touch. And, well, I remember people like that. And I think these were most of the people. And in fact, really, I suppose somebody who would become a glider pilot would become an SS soldier, really. Because we like to think and strove to prove that we were better than the average. Mm. So that's that.
Yeah. What was the manner of your discharge? You know, you'd obviously been off on sick leave, as it were, for a long time.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, how did it come about, and how did they deal with you, and how did you leave the army?
Well, there was no ceremony, no chat with a senior officer. There was. They provided me with an orderly to carry my kit. And he'd been properly schooled. He's obviously been told, although my parents offered him a meal, they knew that it was inappropriate. So off he went.
So he brought you back, had he?
Well, he took me from, I think I was discharged from... Yes, I think I'd gone back to Chester for something.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But there was no ceremony, and there was this curt little note. I could spit when I see it.
Yeah. Give us the words again.
Reason for discharge. Ceasing to fulfil army physical requirements. So, no, that was a bit too curt.
Yes, so. I think so. Not a great ceremony in leaving. How did you feel when you left? I mean, as you walked away, I mean, you must have...
Well, I'd had this... I was going not to a discharge, but for a long period of leave. Mm-hmm. They were wanting me to get physically better. I mean, my weight had dropped, and obviously I was pretty weak. But... I go to many glider pilot reunions, and the Army Air Corps, they used to look after my school. I've had Father Christmas being brought in by helicopter on several occasions. When a friend of mine, he was a staff sergeant when I was a sergeant, he became a colonel, and he was in charge of the School of Infantry at Warminster. He provided two armoured cars to be sent up to bring Father Christmas in. Right. And
You seem to feel quite well disposed towards the
That's
army.
Right, I am. Yeah, I am.
You were sorry to leave, though. I mean, you would like to have...
I wouldn't have been a peacetime.
Would you have stayed on after the war?
No. Right. No. I think it must have been... It must be... I nearly said dreadful. Mm. But... no, I mean, I wouldn't have... I wasn't commissioned. I was a sergeant, but my father was commissioned, and I think probably disappointed that I wasn't. But I wouldn't have stopped on, even as commissioned, I think, because I think the tight little world, the fact that one's wife would have to be careful how she treats the colonel's lady... And that does happen. I mean, it's so in ordinary life. I mean, somebody couldn't say if he worked for